This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Spike Lee has made some 25 feature films, most recently The Five Bloods. He's one of the pioneers of independent film, and his catalog includes some of the most important movies ever made about race. Lee is finishing a multi-part documentary for HBO, A Portrait of a City, called NYC Epicenters, 9/11 to 2021 and a half. Along with his love of New York, Spike Lee is famous for his front row passion for basketball. And I caught up with him this week, along with my colleague Vincent Cunningham, to talk about the long-awaited renaissance, the return of quality pro basketball in the hoop-hungry city of New York.
The Knicks, orange blue skies, we're on the come up. We're on the come up.
Now, I've got to ask you, and I think Vincent feels the same way. Have you felt this way in a very, very long time about New York basketball? It's been a long, long time.
Well, it's been 8 years since the last time we were in the playoffs, so 8 years is a long time. But I like the grit of this team, love what Coach Tibbs is doing, and the potential. And I think that what Durant said, that the Knicks aren't cool anymore, that is not the case now.
That is cold. That is cold.
Yeah. How did it feel in the Garden the other day? It sounded amazing on TV.
If it sounded amazing on television, then you must know how it felt to be in the Garden. 15,000 people sound like it was 30,000. But let me just say, Nick teams forever have never done it easy. We always got to do it the hard way. And I just expect that this series. I never for once thought that Nick's going to sweep the Hawks.
You know, Spike, may you live to be 150 and make many, many more movies, but when and if you ever leave the mortal coil, your obituary will say not only one of the great filmmakers of his time, but the great basketball fan of his time. And I've always tried to imagine...
how did that guy get in the Hall of Fame ahead of me?
Exactly. I always tried to imagine Alfred Hitchcock courtside.
And one, you would need two seats.
one of the YouTube channels or whatever it was focused on you during game one of the Knicks against the Hawks and your up and down emotions and up and down emotions. And all I had to think was, you must have been as tired as a player at the end of the game.
Well, I've been blessed to be positioned to sit courtside. And there's no other event, sport event, even behind the dugout or the home plate, the baseball, you're far away. Football, but courtside, you're right there. They pushed it a little back further than usually just because of COVID. But I'm not complaining. And the interaction you have with players, and people don't understand. I'm not there to taunt. I don't taunt. I just... like,
just a little,
game.
Just a little.
No.
Oh, come on.
I don't taunt. I said, Mr. Shot, that's not taunting. If I'm yelling, am I yelling at the refs? That's not taunting.
Our magazine ran a cover that had some, well, it was the only basketball themed cover I can really remember recently. And there were some Nets toward the front and some Knicks toward the back. I saw on your Instagram that you did a little bit of editing to change the focus of that cover. Could you tell us about that?
Well, it was disrespectful.
Yeah, I've got the text to prove it. I got text from Spike saying, and he moved it around.
So with technology and Photoshop, we did some repurposing.
Spike is fired up, y'all.
Well, Michael Jordan hits a three-pointer from about 30 feet, then looks over to Spike Lee and gives him the look like that's the nail in the coffin.
Huh? The bye-bye win.
Reggie Miller in an animated discussion with Spike Lee, who is an ardent Knicks fan and has a...
Hold it! Hold it!
It's not Spike
It looked like Spike was getting ready to get into his jump shot there.
Well, you can see him from a mile away with that sweater.
Spike, you're currently working on a documentary that looks at the tragedies and the struggles that we faced from 9/11.
As New Yorkers.
As New Yorkers, exactly. From 9/11 to the coronavirus. And it makes me wonder, how does your sports fandom play into all of that? How has it helped during these rough times?
Well, I didn't watch one single game during the bubble. I just couldn't do it. And this past Super Bowl was the first year I watched a football game since the No Freedom League, you know, did dirty to my brother Kaepernick. I only watched Super Bowl because I wanted Brother Man to beat Tom Brady. that didn't happen.
Clearly, the NBA was a center of really serious discussion about racial inequity and racism and George Floyd.
It's the most progressive sports league there is. And I have to give Adam Silver a lot of credit for that.
Why is there such a contrast between the NFL, that what you're calling the No Freedom League, National Football League, and the NBA in that sense?
Because players have more of power because of the contracts. The league is predominantly African-American. And Adam Stern is much more progressive than Roger Goodell. I mean, think about that statement where Goodell fessed up, how they messed up, how they didn't listen, and they didn't even mention Kaepernick's name. I mean, that's some bullshit. Straight up. I just wanted to, and then that's also, you know, a year ago yesterday, you know, this is what we're talking about. So
yeah,
the bubble's right in the middle of that. And there was serious discussions amongst the brothers and the rest of the players in the league whether they should continue to play us or not. So this all happened at the same time.
You mentioned a year ago. And how much George Floyd's death kind of changed the trajectory of last year, even in the middle of the coronavirus. Yeah.
It changed the world. It changed the world. And we have a sequence in the documentary where we show clips of protests all over this globe, all over this world, countries all over this world, cities all over this world, and white people, my white sister brothers, a majority of all these protests and sit-ins around the world that happened.
Spike, late last year, you presented an award, a Penn Benenson Courage Award, to Darnella Frazier. And that was the young woman who filmed George Floyd's murder.
Yes.
And that video was absolutely instrumental in the conviction of Derek Chauvin, the police officer who killed George Floyd. Did you have a chance to talk with Darnella?
No, in fact, we were trying to get in this documentary, but we've been unsuccessful so far. But that was a great act of courage and love. And it was really sad that even with police cameras, we see murders. That in some instances, you know, another thing in North Carolina, where they didn't want to, you know, the judge didn't want the tape released. So what's the purpose of having these policemen, policewomen, police people have cameras, and then in the court system, they're not shared with the public? That's defeating the purpose, I think.
Now, but you've been around for a while, and not just sports history, but history.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, a year later after the murder of George Floyd, do you sense that all the gestures, all the reading lists, all the corporate goodwill and demonstrations in earnest, Is that going to have a lasting effect, or will we move back to status quo?
I'll give you one of my favorite sayings, David. We shall see what we shall see.
Welcome to Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena. It's time for round one, game one of the 2021 NBA playoffs.
So last Sunday's playoff game against the Hawks was also the biggest indoor gathering New York has held since the pandemic started, with 15,000 people in the stands. And so when you see more people back out in the streets, getting back to one another, I don't know, do you have some wishes for New York as we come back together in public space?
Yeah, we gotta just, you know, this one thing that people I think are underestimating is, as far as a pandemic goes, Corona, is the mental instability that has really made people lose it. And a lot of these people who are mentally unstable are the homeless. Not just New York City, but all over the world. You know, people on the streets. And so far, to best of my knowledge, we've not had an answer for it. And it's really had an effect on the homeless. And 20 years from now, there'll be reports on how this world became unstable mentally because of the pandemic. I mean, we don't even know now, but it's gonna reports, films, documentaries are gonna deal with how the mental health of human beings changed.
You see it in your own surroundings, in your office, in Fort Greene, all around you?
Yeah, I mean, homelessness is everywhere. And then you can't escape the headlines of the dailies of somebody being pushed from the train or people being killed by wayward bullets. Asian Americans attacked, now Jewish Americans attacked. Black people, brown people still getting killed by law enforcement. So there's a lot of stuff that's still with us as we get back to normalcy. And I put quotes on that because we get back to normal, it was fucked up, you know, when it was normal. We got to try to get to a place, this is my opinion, we have to try to get a place that's we're moving forward to where it was. We want to go back to the same bullshit that we had before this thing happened, in my opinion. That would have meant that we didn't learn anything from this. We have to understand that there are lessons to be learned. We have to apply that moving forward. I really find it hard to believe that it took the pandemic to understand that these things have been with us. It just didn't show up. You just weren't paying. You weren't paying attention. Or you didn't give a fuck.
On that happy note, Spike. Go Knicks.
Yeah. Orange and blue skies.
Go Knicks. I'll be looking for you in the stands tonight.
Spike Lee. If you haven't seen all of his movies, get to it. And Vincent Cunningham is a staff writer at The New Yorker. His first novel is coming out next year. I'm David Remnick, and that's our program for this week. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This episode was produced by Alex Barron, Emily Botin, Ave Carrillo, Rhiannon Corby, Kala Lea, David Krasnow, Gofen and Putubwele, Louis Mitchell, Michelle Moses,
Annabelle Bacon,
and Stephen Valentino, with help from Allison McAdam, Meng-Fei Chen, and Emily Mann.
Our show this week was engineered by Harrison Keithline.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.